I had Julius Chassin as Zach and I had labor. He made up for a lot of that gap because I got him for two, but he didn't make up for it enough. And because I bought a bunch of cheapo pitchers, well, I bought Felipe Vasquez and a bunch of cheapo pitchers, it didn't really work out for me on the pitching side. The pitching was okay. Everybody, and welcome to episode 176 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus podcast. I know it's been a while, but this is the season wrap podcast. Zach Steinhorn, a fantasy editor of Baseball Prospectus, and I are going to go through our various performances in Tout Wars and both the labor leagues that we were in, including the one we partnered in. Before I go on, I just want to, as always, give a shout out to Jen Mock Ramos, who's behind the glass. She's on the BP stats team. She also writes for Hardball Times. You can find her work in a number of places, but I want to mention those two most prominently. So, Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Still kind of bummed out about the way our NL labor season finished. But, you know, after having about, a week and a half to digest it, you know what? We had a very successful season.
Yeah, I feel better. I think did you win any of your other leagues?
No, I didn't win one league this year. I was close in my home league, but I just
So I won a home league, and you know, I was saying before we got on, it's pretty nice payout. I mean, it's not like, you know, winning a Millie Maker in DFS or winning an NFBC, but you know, it was a solid payout, and I think that took some of the sting off for me. It's nice to have at least one league where you're like, yeah, I won. I did what I wanted to do. I achieved my goals. You know, it's a keeper. I'm sure your home league's a keeper too. So I'm in bad shape next year, but that doesn't matter to me. Flags fly forever. That's the name of the podcast. So what I think we're going to do, Zach and I are in a lot of different expert leagues. We're going to start with the Tout Wars leagues that we were in, and we're going to start with Zach's mix. Now, Zach, you're in the auction mix for Tout, is that correct?
Yeah, mixed auction league.
Okay. I don't know if I know our colleague Brett Sayer, who unfortunately couldn't be here today to talk about his experience. He's in that league as well. I know he did a preseason write-up. Did you or did you not do that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did. Okay. So we can reference our listeners to that write up. So I guess I want to ask you, because, you know, obviously I wasn't in that league. I didn't follow it closely. What were your goals going in? Like, are you like a straight up value guy, or do you go in with like a categorical plan?
I try to draft as balanced of a roster as I can from a category perspective. I generally sort of lay out my ideal team with, like, you know, maybe five or six options for each position. That's pretty much my auction preparation strategy. Trying to kind of like estimate how much certain players are going to go for, then building my team around that, making sure that I address, you know, as many categories as best I can as possible. So that's pretty much my strategy going in. I'm not really a strict dollar value drafter, and I also tend to shy away from the stars and scrub strategy.
Well, I will say, so, you know, as people who've listened to this podcast and listened to me drone on, you know, for the last 5 years at BP talking about fantasy baseball, I am a strict valuation player. But, you know, I will say, as far as that goes, mixed leagues and mixed league auctions, it's very difficult to do that, in my opinion. And I think in part, you know, it's there's so much more of a replacement level. Like, there's so many more players at the bottom of the pool who, you know, honestly are, you know, they're just not going to, you know, I'm trying to give a good example, but, you know, you can find somebody at the bottom of the pool who's a pretty good player even at the very end of the auction. Whereas in an only, like, you get to the end, and if you're not a strict valuation person, it could be a really long day for you. So Zach, tell me about your auction. Like, how did you feel coming out? Like, did you feel like you had a good team? Do you feel you were competitive? Did you feel, oh, I didn't really do what I wanted to do? Like, just tell me about that.
I actually felt like I had a pretty good team coming out of the draft, which was kind of rare for me because I'm usually like, oh, I screwed this up. I could have done better with this. But this year, I really liked my team heading out of the draft. I had targeted Jose Altuve because I've owned him like three straight years in tout, and I just he's one of like quote my guys. And but then when the bidding got to 48, I just pulled out and I turned around and just took Mookie Betts for 44. So I was kind of happy with how I just on the spot was able to adapt to what was going on, and I actually ended up having a much better team than the one I actually sketched out in my draft preparation.
So did you have was there someone you regretted or like a category you regretted missing on? Or did you walk out thinking, yeah, this is a pretty balanced squad and everything's A-OK?
I thought my hitting was very good, which is usually the case. I tend to really value hitting more than pitching. But at the same time, I thought the pitching had upside and potential, but it also had a lot of risk. I drafted Johnny Cueto as my third starter for $9. Which was, I thought, a good price, but there was definitely health risk with him, and it turned out to be about as bad as it could get from a result standpoint for him. After he was like very good in April, and then he just got injured, and that was pretty much it. But, so I drafted Johnny Cueto. I took some chances with like Jake Odorizzi for $1. I took Gio Gonzalez because I just got him for $5. I thought that was a pretty good value, and then I built my rotation around. Sort of my typical strategy is to draft not the elite ace group, but the guys kind of in that second tier who I think could outperform their price. So I drafted Carlos Martinez and Jose Quintana. So both of those were disappointing too. So really, from a starting pitching standpoint, there really wasn't one. I would say CC Sabathia, I guess, was my best pick for $1, in terms of earning what I paid for him. So that was really the cause of my downfall. I finished in sixth place, so I did a pretty decent job. The hitting was dominant, and then the pitching, the starting pitching was a problem all year. And then the Roberto Osuna situation really killed me because he was my top closer.
Well, I was about to ask you about saves because, one thing I noticed, although oddly enough, looking at the final finish, so you finish with 84.5 points, which, like you said, is solid. I just let our listeners know, there's a FAB penalty in the Tout Wars leagues. I know what it is in the only leagues because that's what I've done. What's the point threshold in mixed for the penalty?
It's 75 points. So it's only half the maximum points.
So you finished above that. You finished with 84.5. If you look at 75 as like a 500 team, yeah, you probably finished a few games over 500. So it was a solid season. But yeah, Tim Heaney of RotoWire, one going away. I mean, he had an amazing season at 130 points. Looks like his only weakness was on base percentage. And Fred Zinke, who, you used to work with him at MLB, he is one of the best at this. He finished with 107 points and had his usual solid year. So I think that's some of it in these leagues, which, people kind of forget. Like, we're playing against some really tough competition. This isn't like a home league where there's you and two other people who are great. And then like two or three people who are okay. And then half the people in the league, fantasy football comes around and they're listening to Matthew Berry in July. Like, these are mostly dedicated people. And, I look at the mixed pool and it's funny, with one or two exceptions, these are also people who are like primarily baseball, or like, Brent Hershey from Baseball HQ or Ron Chandler, a legend in this industry. They're baseball dedicated.
Yeah, there are a couple of guys that kind of like, I would say, in the beginning of September, kind of weren't as active.
Right.
But yeah, this league has been really this was I believe my seventh year in the league, and this league has been really competitive every single year. I think Todd Dola, when he does his FAB write ups during the season, he always points out, oh, there's so many people bidding on players this week, and it's very rare that there's a week where there's not at least I'd say like 12 of the 15 owners placing bids on players.
Speaking of that, it's a good segue and kind of my last question for you before we move on to my Tout NL. As far as moves in season, was there anything you did that jumped out as like something that you're like, did you make any trades, first of all?
I made one trade, which turned out one significant trade, which turned out to not be great. I traded I traded Ross Stripling, who I actually picked up that week for Corey Knebel. I was desperate for saves after losing Osuna, and I wasn't in love with Knebel, but I figured, oh, you know what? He has a decent chance of finishing the year as the closer, and you know, he actually landed up giving me like 12 or 13 saves, but it didn't pan out. And then of course Stripling goes on to have like a 2 month period where he delivers ace production, so that didn't work out too well. The highlights of my season really were two fab pickups that I made early on, and that was Nick Markakis and Jesus Aguilar. So I got both of those guys for a combined 60 fab dollars. So both of those pickups were made in April. So I can't even imagine where I'd be without those two. They ended up being, I'd say, two of maybe my top six hitters all season. So, and so in terms of fab, you know, I had a pretty good year with fab. The trades, I wasn't as active as I was the year before, but the trades were kind of a wash. But that pretty much sums up, you know, my managing season, other than just what happened out of the draft.
Is Talmix an active trading league, or is it kind of like passive?
Well, it's a pretty active trading league. I guess the fact that Fred Zinke is in it, you know, helps that. But
that's true. He is like I was in labor with him for 2 or 3 years, and yeah, he's the year Brett and I won labor 3 years ago. We made one trade the whole year, and Fred almost caught us in large part because he just kept churning and doing it very well.
Yeah, I'm usually not a really active trader, but the last few years I've been maybe making like three trades a year, you know, of consequence. You could also make those fab trades, which is very common.
Yep.
But so it is a pretty active trading league. It's just an active league in general, and to win that league is a really, you know, I won in 2016 and I felt like that was a big accomplishment. I guess I'll try again in 2019.
Oh, winning these leagues is a big deal. And if you win, there's a difference. I mean, I guess it's a good segue. Do you have anything else? I don't want to cut you off before I segue into town now. NL.
No, that's about it. I mean, I was happy with my performance. I could have been a little better. I finished in the top four each of the last 4 years. So compared to that, it was a little bit disappointing. But I mean, my fab moves I liked, and overall the draft was pretty successful.
Okay, so I'm going to segue into Town NL. You know, speaking of that, you know, it's funny. I won Town NL in 2015, and I've been in it since 2010. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm glad I've won. On the other hand, you know, winning, you know, I'm now in my ninth year. You kind of get to the point if you're in a 12-team league and you win once every 12 years, it's like, oh, okay, well, I've won once every year, you know, as many slots as there are in the league and years I've been in it. So it would be nice to pick up a second win. Something funny about Town NL, and just to kind of work backwards from what's going to be our Labor NL talk, I was pulled into the National League pool in Labor at the last second. Steve Moyer, one of the longest participants in Labor, and I mentioned this before, died unexpectedly in his hotel room in Arizona as he was traveling, as a matter of fact. And that wasn't discovered until like late in the afternoon during the AL auction. And I was asked at the last second to fill in, so I wasn't as prepared as I normally am. You know, I usually take my values from the site and kind of go off of those. So I made some adjustments for Town NL because I didn't like some of the things I did. And one of the biggest adjustments I made is I wanted to get an ace. And the biggest mistake I made, and I don't even think this is just in hindsight, was getting Clayton Kershaw as my ace instead of Max Scherzer. Kershaw was fine. I put together some preliminary values. As people who have been listening to this podcast and, you know, reading me know, like, those values come out in November. I rehashed last year. I go through trends. The preliminary values show that Clayton Kershaw earned $21 in NL only, which, given the drop in strikeouts for him, given the lack of innings once again, was okay. The problem is that I paid $39 for him. And, you know, obviously, if you pay that much for somebody, you want value. You don't want, like, good stats, but a gap. I had Julius Chacin as Zach and I had labor. He made up for a lot of that gap because I got him for $2, but he didn't make up for it enough. And because I bought a bunch of cheapo pitchers, well, I bought Felipe Vasquez and a bunch of cheapo pitchers, it didn't really work out for me on the pitching side. The pitching was okay. The hitting, this wasn't the plan, but it turned out to be stars and scrubs as well. Tout is, Zach did mention this, but all the Tout leagues are on-base leagues. So I wanted one of Paul Goldschmidt, Joey Votto, or Bryce Harper. I got Goldschmidt. He was excellent. The one disappointing thing about Goldschmidt is he didn't run nearly as much. He stole 7 bases. So while he was very good, again, I probably took a slight loss on him. You know, without diving into like player by player and everybody I got, probably the biggest problem that I had in Tout was 3 years ago in 2015 when I won. It was a Stars and Scrubs team, and these scrubs I got, you know, I'm calling these major league players who are better at baseball than I ever will be, paid off, you know, for an NL only. There were guys like Freddie Galvis, Echeverria, back when he's on the Marlins, there was like a third player, and they all produced. They weren't great, but they all played every day. They all, you know, managed to drive in runs and score runs, steal a few bases, hit a few homers. The players I got this year at the bottom of the heap just weren't able to do that, and that was part of the problem. But the other problem that I had in Tout is and I'll be honest about this, I did not manage the team very well in season. So On Roto has a great feature. Unfortunately, on the public pages, you can't see this. It has a draft day rosters feature. So what it tells you is it tells you what your team would look like if you didn't do anything or nobody did anything. You just came out with that team. So I had the fourth best auction. I bought a 78-point team. And the offense was very light except for stolen bases. And the pitching was, even with the Kershaw injury, was very good. It wasn't the best in any category, but it was at or near the top in every category. And unfortunately, and Zach, I'll let you chime in with some questions at this point because I don't just want this to turn into a monologue. I wound up with a like middle of the pack team in the low 60s. I've kind of already put this out of my mind so much that I've kind of stopped looking at it. Yeah, it was 61.5 points. And you know, the threshold for the penalty in Tout NL is 60. So I wound up with an average team. I kind of traded and moved myself from a team that was good but wouldn't have won to a team that really was just slightly above average.
So how would you alter your draft day approach next season? Like what did you learn from this year, and what adjustments are you going to make?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think the biggest mistake I made, you know, part of the reason that Labor NL team was as successful as it was, is I just went for value. And by pushing Kershaw up to a price where he was so prohibitively expensive that I'm like, well, I got Kershaw, but even if Kershaw had gone out and thrown like 220 innings at the level he was at this year, he wouldn't have returned value. So I think first and foremost, I need to look more at value, less at trying to do a strategy. That's never worked as well for me, particularly in an expert league. It's fine in a keeper if you have freezes and people have stronger teams than you do coming into an auction. I think when everybody starts with a fresh slate, you shouldn't do that. The other piece that I'd probably watch a little bit, the biggest mistake on this team, it wasn't any of the pitchers, even though the pitchers, I was dissatisfied certainly with some of them, but it was Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton was a discount. I got him after I got Starling Marte. It was overkill in steals, and that was one of the bad trades that I made. I traded Starling Marte early. The trade was okay. I got Kyle Hendricks, and Hendricks, from the time I got him until the end of the season, was really solid. But I would have been better off with Marte and Hamilton, or honestly dealing Hamilton for even pennies on the dollar and just having the broad-based contributions of Marte. You know, Zach, I know you and I have talked about this. You know, you talk about avoiding players like Hamilton. As much as they return value in an NL only, players aren't running like they used to. Like Billy Hamilton doesn't look like he's going to ever steal 50 or 60 bases again, because even a team like the Reds, which isn't the most analytic team, or at least they don't have a reputation of being the most analytic team, they're not even running him as much, and they're not hitting him at the top of the lineup.
And the key with Hamilton is that, you know, you were expecting, what, 60-plus steals from him this season, and you needed those 60 steals for him to return value, because he wasn't. I know there was talk, you know, entering the season that, oh, Hamilton is really a three-category player, he's not a one-category player. But as it turns out, you know, you're so reliant on those steals, and that's the reason why I avoid those one pony type of players. There's too much downside involved, you know, relative to the price you're
paying. Well, that's the part that was painful, which is, you know, Hamilton stole, what, like 40, or I don't even know if he got to 40 this year. You know, he came close if he didn't quite get there. But, you know, I'm looking at now because I have my team all year. So, yeah, Billy Hamilton stole 34 bases. And steals was tight in Tout, and had Hamilton stole 54 bases, I would have had 7 more points and I would have won the category. It wouldn't have been enough to win me the league. But yes, to your point, that was the expectation. But, you know, I think the bigger problem was, you know, beyond Goldschmidt, some of the mid-tier players that I picked up on offense, you know, Chris Taylor, Ryan Zimmerman, unfortunately, Kyle Schwarber, Odubel Herrera, they were all okay. And, you know, Schwarber in particular in on-base league was more than okay. But I needed one or two of those players to be more than okay. Like you, like to win a league, any league, and this is especially true in an expert league, you need value certainly, and you need to get an ROI on who you're picking up. But honestly, you also need one or two profit makers. You need one or two people to exceed what you paid for them. And I just didn't have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why fab pickups, you know, if you have one or two great fab pickups, that can mean the difference between winning a league and losing. The year that I won Tout, you know, I drafted Trey Turner in the reserve round. So there's always that guy that, you know, just carries your team at the end of the season. It might take a half a season for him to emerge, but you know, relative to what you paid for them, you know, he gives you a huge amount of profit. So
yeah, and the people I you know, the players I got on reserve or for zero didn't really like pay off. I did have some nice. One thing I did well with Fab is, well, I had Seth Lugo for zero in this league, and unlike you in labor, I used him quite a bit, and he was very helpful. I fabbed Adam Ottavino early, and I paid a lot for him, and he was great. I got Sir Anthony Dominguez, and I managed to maximize, you know, his value for quite a while, and even kind of reserved him when, you know, things were down. So yeah, I made some good pickups, but again, none of them were excelled. Like I didn't get Max Muncy. I didn't wind up with anyone like that. My best hitting pickup was Christian Villanueva, who certainly provided the power. But he was slightly bad on base, did nothing else, and really a lot of his output. You know, funny thing about Villanueva is I picked him up just for the heck of it right before that 3-home run game at the beginning of the year. I don't even remember who I had out, but I was like, well, oh, it was Martin Prado. And I was like, well, I could pick up Pablo Sandoval or Christian Villanueva. I'm going to go with the devil I don't know. And that obviously worked out. But the problem is, even in only when that's your best pickup on your team as holes, it's not going to do enough for you.
Yeah, you need to do a little bit better than that in terms of the fab, even though it's really tough. I know in NL labor, we'll talk about that in a bit, but in NL labor, you know, to start the season, I have some experience playing in only leagues, but not, you know, but not a ton. And in NL labor, it was like, you know, a 12-team NL only league. To start the season, I looked at the waiver wire and it was just so, it was like, there was not one player that was attracted to me. Lands up being a little bit better as the season goes along, because players emerge that you didn't really expect to emerge and they happen to be on the waiver wire. But to start out the season, it's very challenging. Yeah, so you just have to wait it out for, I'd say, about a month, and then it gets a little better. And then, of course, with the crossover players in July, and that's when it gets a lot better. So you have to you can't win an only league without getting at least one of those big profit guys.
Yeah, now one thing about Tout that's different is because you have $0 fab, and you can also speculate on minor leaguers, it is a different game. It does lend itself to more, you know, churning, you know, using a pitching spot for a week. Now, the rule in Tout is that you have to carry the player for a week, even if he's in the minors on your active roster. Now, the thing about that is, in a mixed league, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, Zach, I'd be less inclined to do that, because especially with a hitter, because you're taking zeros from a slot, and that can be costly, unless it's like a catcher, like because it's a two-catcher league. Tout NL, because it's, you know, in an only league, you're going to have one or two hitters, and you're still going to have pitchers that are like a zero or worse than a zero. You can look at it like, you know what, I'm going to carry that minor leaguer for a week. I'm going to stash that player and hope that that player works out. And I didn't really hit on any of those players either.
Yeah, in mixed, I really avoid those situations where, you know, picking up the minor leaguers, say, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before they're going to get called up. Just the risk reward. It's an interesting, you know, decision. I guess if the player is someone like a Vlad Jr. last year, it was rumored that he was close to getting called up, but it never happened. So that I could understand. And the difference between picking up a player, you know, a week too early as opposed to a week too late, it's a huge difference in fab price. But yeah, I generally avoid that. And that's why the reserve rounds in the draft are so important, because you could just, if you just pick one of those guys and stash them during the season, if you have the roster space, you know, that does not cost you a week's worth of stats. So, you know, if you hit on one of those reserve round guys, even in mixed, that makes a huge difference. So so that's generally the approach I take. I'm hesitant to do that situation where I'm, you know, dedicating a roster, taking zeros for a roster spot, because in the mixed league, even the waiver wire guys who aren't prospects do contribute a decent amount of stats.
Yep. So I want to be mindful of we're recording in the middle of the day, actually. I'm on my lunch break. I think most of us are on our lunch break. So I'll be mindful of time. And do you want to pivot over to labor AL, or do you want to just go
to
the NL?
Let's just quickly talk about your AL labor team.
Okay.
I know you followed a Stars and Scrubs strategy at the auction, and you drafted Altuve.
Francisco. It wasn't intended, but yes, that's right. What happened.
Right. So you drafted Altuve, Lindor, and Trout. You finished in fifth place. So were you a believer in the Stars and Scrubs strategy in an only league I'm heading in, or
no?
Sort of a value.
It was a value thing, and it was a complete accident. So what happened was, and I think I wrote this in my pre-write-up, I thought those players were – Lindor I targeted a little, but I thought Altuve and Trout were going to sail past price. I said 42 on Trout. Greg Ambrosius and Sean Childs of NFBC were there. They almost always get Trout every year. It's kind of a joke. And I was like, yeah, they're going to pay 43. And I'm going to say that's that. It stopped. Lindor, I was targeting a little bit. But I thought Tristan Cockcroft, ESPN, would say 34. He really likes him. He hemmed and hawed. He didn't. There was just a lot of conservatism early, which is very unlike Labor AL. And actually, what's funny about Labor NL, I thought Labor NL I'd wind up with the Stars and Scrubs team, because that's usually a very conservative room. So they flipped this year. The AL was very conservative at the beginning. The NL was somewhat liberal at the beginning, and that's what happened. And I felt I adjusted well on the hitting side. And, you know, if you look at the final standings, they kind of bear that out. Like, I think I finished in the upper 40s on hitting points, which is pretty similar to what our Labor NL team did, Zach. And there were some disappointments, and the big, similar to what I just talked about in Tout NL, I'd say the bottom-end players, I'm going to stop calling them scrubs because that's not very nice, the bottom-end players didn't deliver. Like, I had, like, Lucas Duda. I saw you had him in Tout Mixed. You know, he was okay. He certainly wasn't great. Like, he was just not exactly, like, what I was hoping for. Jaimer Candelario was kind of banged up. He was sort of hurt. I never really had any catchers all year. I had two $1 catchers. I kept churning. I never found somebody. It's difficult in an only, but even by that standard, I just didn't find anybody. Shin-Soo Chu was great in the first half, completely disappeared in the second half. Overall, the value was fine. Same thing with Mitch Moreland. So yeah, I mean, overall on offense, solid. I think when you spend as much as I did on offense, that's where most of my money went. I spent over 200, and I had 48.5 points on offense, by the way, which was solid. I was just hoping for more. And the pitching was a similar thing where I didn't spend much on it. And honestly, Charlie Morton was okay. David Price was okay. I traded for J-Hap early. I traded Adam Jones for him. I thought that was a really good trade. I just didn't get enough anywhere else on the margins. I didn't buy saves, and I wasn't able to fab a closer, so obviously I finished last in the category. That's the only category I actively dumped that could have worked out. I finished 10 points out of first, so really, that whilst, you know, finishing in fifth, finishing with that point total isn't great, it does tell me that, you know, if I'd gotten one or two more things to go well, it could have worked out. You know, unlike Tout NL, where I could blame bad moves in season, there wasn't really a lot I was able to do in season in this league. There weren't a lot of trades. The trades I made were mostly kind of a net neutral. If I have a regret, I traded Kyle Gibson for Albert Pujols. I got him cheaply. That trade happened where I got a fair amount of value from Gibson, so it wasn't like I got nothing from him. But in retrospect, and then I flipped Pujols in another deal, so it's not like I got the net loss from Pujols. But I Gibson probably would have helped my staff in strikeouts and in ERA in particular.
And that's the challenge with labor. It really puts an emphasis on the draft. It's almost like a draft and hold, you know, league in a way, where you're not allowed. I know in the AL and NL labor leagues, you're not allowed to every fab player you pick up, you have to drop a guy in your active lineup. So that was a guy who you actually drafted.
Yeah, unless they're in the minors.
Unless they're in the minors or one of the guys you drafted as a reserve. So it really limits your roster flexibility, and you really have to make some tough choices, which is especially tough in an NL or AL because, you know, guys, you know, it's hard to find valuable guys on the waiver wire. Players who you drafted you know, have some value. So it's not like, you know, you really have to make a tough call with, you know, should I give up on this guy who I drafted for this fab player or not? So that's tough, as opposed to some of that talent.
And I think that's influenced at the auction too. Like I took James Shields on reserve, and you know, if you're a mixed league player or a casual fan, you know, you can laugh and laugh about James Shields. James Shields was solid. I mean, he wasn't great, but I streamed him. I kind of used him fairly judiciously. I'm trying to look and see here as I'm going on the fly, like what his, you know, ERA was for this season versus when I had him on my team. You know, I don't want to turn this into the James Shields podcast. This isn't 2009 anymore, but yeah, Shields for me, like the wins obviously weren't there. I mean, a 4.22 ERA and a 1.23 WHIP. And on the season, he had a 4.53 ERA and a 1.31 WHIP. So obviously, I kept him out, or did a pretty good job of keeping him out of the worst starts. And as my number four, he was fine. You know, I think it's that depth issue, to your point, that was the problem. You know, Zach, I just wasn't able to find via Fab. My first year in Labor AL, which is 2017, I got Jordan Montgomery. I had Andrew Cashner as a $0 pitcher. There were one or two other pitchers like that I just was able to find and turn what was an okay staff at auction into a really good one. That was kind of the plan this year. That's what I was hoping to do, and it just didn't coalesce. Like, I wasn't able to find that acquisition via Fab. Like, I'm looking at all the pitchers I carried during the year, you know, and I made a lot of free agent moves on pitching. That was the plan. It just didn't happen for me. There just isn't a pitcher. I don't think there's a pitcher I picked up outside of Doug Fister and four starts in the middle of the year who put an ERA up under four for me.
That tells you.
Yeah, it is tough. It's something I thought I had more success with, though, based on 2017. I think what's changed, too, and we'll get into this in Labor NL, maybe it's a good segue for that, because I don't want to spend too much time on this fifth-place team, which is not as dramatic as what happened to us in Labor NL. But really, it's tougher now because so many teams, you've got the Rays using the opener, you've got pitchers going fewer innings, you've got fewer win opportunities. It's just tough to find starters, even in a deep mixed league. And in only, it's almost impossible.
Let's actually use that as a great segue to transition to NL Labor, because one guy who you drafted who was probably the best draft pick of the entire draft, and that was Jesus Aguilar, who you took in the reserve round. So you really need to get one. You don't have to get someone who is that, you know, delivers that much profit, but it does help to draft at least one reserve player who returns a positive return on investment. So Jesus Aguilar, definitely the best pick you made there. And just from a general perspective, when looking at the NL Labor roster that you drafted, you know, the first reaction for me was that, you know, there was upside on the roster, but there was also plenty of risk. At the time of the draft, Daniel Murphy was expected to miss the first few weeks of the season, but ended up not even making his debut until mid-June. Matt Carpenter was another guy who was questionable for opening day. He ended up missing no time, and he ended up being one of our best, probably our team MVP of the season. Ronald Acuna we had as well, and he had yet to even play a major league game in the regular season. Jake Arrieta was unsigned, and there was a risk that he would get signed with an AL team, and that would mean we would just lose him entirely. And then also the last guy was Scooter Gennett, who was a guy who I was sort of wary of drafting because I wasn't sure if the power outburst from last season was for real. So and then he ended up giving us a .310 batting average of 23 homers and 92 RBI. So Mike took on a lot of risks, and it did work out fine. And so my question, I guess, would be that did you make a special effort to take on those risks, or was that as well just a product of dollar valuations?
It was a straight up product of dollar valuations. I will say Scooter is a player that I was all over. I had him in the CBS NL. I regretted, I didn't mention this in the Tout recap, but I strongly regretted not getting him in Tout. And when I got Hamilton in that league, it kind of put me in a price bind, and I couldn't get Scooter. And I got Scooter for 14 in Labor. He went for 10 in Tout. I was like actually kind of mad about that. But no, a lot of this was value. Like I looked at a lot of these players at their prices. Like, you know what? Like Scooter Gennett, could he possibly fall off? Well, yes. But if he earns, you know, his floor is probably like $10 or $12. You know, Matt Carpenter, even not figuring the injury. And if he plays half a season, his floor is probably $8 to $10. With a lot of these players, I was looking at floor. And, you know, with the exception, you know, taking aside like J.P. Crawford, who was relatively cheap, or players like that. You know, with the exception of Dexter Fowler, nearly everybody from a pricing perspective kind of worked out. And that's really what it came down to on offense, which is, you know, a lot of these players, you know, you mentioned Carpenter, you mentioned Jeanette, you mentioned Acuna. You know, you didn't mention Andrew McCutchen, but McCutchen, you know, before you trade him, we'll get into that, you know, he was fine. If you combine his AL stats, he was a $20 earner, and I paid $24 for him. That's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for that, like, secret sauce of when you do a balanced team like this one, profit from enough players so that when the losses come through on a few of them, which they will, you're not like, oh gosh, like I can't take these losses. And I think by my calculations, Fowler was the only double digit loser on offense.
Yeah, that was I actually probably hung with him for a little bit too long. I ended up dropping him. I don't remember exactly when it was, but he had a, I think it was a sub 200 batting average.
I don't really blame you for hanging on to him, though, because really, who, even a bad year from him, you know, I know he's more of an on-base player, but you would have expected like a 220 average, not what he did.
Right. And during most of this first half, you know, our strength was obviously home runs and RBIs, and the weaknesses were stolen bases, which I know you mentioned in the past where, you know, we were expecting 25 to 30 from Acuna and that didn't happen. And then also the batting average, which was, I wasn't expecting the batting average to be, you know, that bad, mainly because I wasn't expecting Fowler, you know, to hit under 200. But, you know, Fowler was probably the biggest reason for the poor batting average. We also had Justin Bour. So a lot of guys with sub 250 batting average. And we'll touch on this later, but this is another reason why I tried to, you know, in my trades, I tried to address that category as best I could.
Yeah. Yeah, what's funny about that is that really the team as it was constructed, and I didn't see this coming mainly because of Aguiar, it was a three, there were three categories, home runs, RBI, and runs, that were just so strong, and there was an excess that, you know, I think had you known, you could have been more aggressive earlier. And I'm not saying I blame you, I wouldn't have done this either, I would have looked at it more cautiously, but you could have been aggressive in May and tried to trade for those steals. Average is hard to trade for, but you could have tried to trade for those steals earlier and maybe even given up, like, you know, $1.25 on the dollar.
Yeah, it was a tough trading league. There was really not a lot. Unlike my Tout Wars mixed league, you know, we're not a lot of active owners on the trade front. I didn't really, like you mentioned, I didn't really look for an early batting average trade. Instead, I looked for an early closer trade because we ended up having four closers at one time. We had Brad Hand, Wade Davis, Kyle Barraclough, and Josh Hader at one point. So we had, it was an excess of closers. Landed up where we actually lost first place in saves at the very end of the season because three of those guys landed up either getting traded out of a closer position or losing their jobs entirely. So I really focused on saves, and that even was tough. That took me about, you know, three to four weeks to kind of finally find a trade that made sense. I landed up trading with first place Howard Bender, which wasn't ideal. I don't generally like to do that. Trading Wade Davis for Patrick Corbin, which on paper, you know, is a good value deal, but it might have helped him a little bit more than it helped me, but it still helped me. So that was really the area where I focus on in trades. And yeah, in hindsight, maybe trying to more actively address that batting average would have been a good idea as well.
So I'm going to back up a little bit to the auction with the pitchers, because those are all good points. I know we're jumping around a little bit. Something that was different about this auction, I mentioned earlier during the AL segment that, you know, the NL Labor NL was more liberal with spending in the early going. So I was truthfully expecting to get a Max Scherzer or a Clayton Kershaw. And Howard Bender of Fantasy Alarm, who wound up winning the league, he got Scherzer. And, you know, I was asked, and I mentioned this in the write-up of the recap that Zach and I put together last week. It's up on the site already. Max Scherzer was my instant regret. I walked out of there and I was like, oh, I really wish I'd gotten Scherzer. And Zach, you know, I know you prefer balance and, you know, you might not go for a player like that, especially in an only. But the pitching prices or the starting pitching prices were $67 higher across the board, which is like $5.50 per team on average than they were the year before. You know, and that's part of the context of getting Jake Arrieta. You know, I think at the moment, you know, it was kind of an exciting thing if you were listening on Sirius XM and you're like, oh my gosh, Mike and Steve Garner are battling over Arrieta. Like, why is Mike doing that? Arrieta might wind up in the American League. It was very contextual. I looked at what was left on the board and I was like, yeah, I know the risk. I also know if I don't get Arrieta, who at this point isn't even really an ace, but he's probably more of a number two at best, it's going to be a really long day. And the closers are the other side of that. I had I prepared more for Labor NL, I would have push those prices down because that's what the market does. And the market did do that again this year. So I got Davis, who I thought at 13 was a bargain. I got Hand, who I loved coming in this year. And I think would have earned what I was expecting to earn had he stayed in San Diego all year and been the closer all year. And really, I'll be honest, Josh Hader, Bear Claw was just an end of, you know, his $3 is an end of, well, let's see what happens. Hader was really more for his rate stats and strikeouts. That's what I was looking at. I was looking at him being a three-category monster. To be honest, he's a big help. If we didn't get him, we're not in it in ERA and WHIP. And even with the collapse we had in those categories, I know I'm skipping to the end, we're not close to winning this league. So Hader wasn't really for the saves. He was more for the, you know, he was more for the rate stats. Other thing I want to mention before I throw it back to you, Zach, Howard was the one bidding against me on Hader. And I almost, if Howard had said seven, I would have let him go. You know, if Howard gets Hader, it goes from being a close race at the end to a walk.
Oh, forget about it. I think, the strategy of drafting those, you know, elite middle relievers, even in a mixed league, I think it's a little bit underrated, you know, having one of those guys, I guess going into the season, it was like a David Robertson or someone like that who could just give you pretty much like a third of a season of ace level stats, you know, so that's underrated. And even and in an only league, I think it's even more underrated. So the Hader pickup turned to be one of the best draft picks of the entire season. Like you said, you know, that probably made the difference of us finishing in second or maybe finishing in, you know, fourth or fifth.
Yeah, although by profit, you know, outside of Aguiar was on reserve, the big guy was Julius Chacin. And it was really funny. A lot of people didn't have faith in him. They were pointing at Petco. I got to tip my cap to Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs on this one. Jeff last year wrote a really good article about Chacin's improvements and was like, I'm not going to oversell it. You know, I'm not saying he's an ace, but he looks – this is legitimate. It'll hold going from park to park. I'm paraphrasing. If Jeff is listening, there's no way Jeff Sullivan is listening to this. And, you know, he was a really good starter. You know, he earned 19. That's $2 fewer than Clayton Kershaw earned. You know, he was a big part of our success. Although those stats include the game 163, which, as it turns out, doesn't count in labor.
You thought it did at the last second, but then it landed up. I was surprised too. I thought it did too. Because in Tower Wars, it counts.
And the rules aren't very clear. Like, the rules don't really say one way or the other if they count. So yeah, I was confused. Every AL or NL league I've ever played in like counts those. So I was like thrown off.
Yeah, and that's a discussion for another day with the why, you know, should you count that or should you not? But
right, we can have that discussion maybe on one of our like slow winter podcasts. We can have a rules roundtable.
Yeah, on that Monday, I think you texted me and you're like, yeah, now our chances are very low, and I'm like, you know what, our chances are over because the season.
Oh, what I said was after that Rizzo homer, you know, we're done, and you're like, Mike, like you do realize like it's over, and I'm like, what? And I think an hour later, after like. You know, sending a direct message to Gardner on Twitter. He's like, yeah, we don't count the last day. He's like, we might revisit it next year, but, you know, we don't count it. And, it didn't matter. And let's I guess, skip ahead a little bit to, like, the last month or the end. So I know we mentioned this in the article, Zach, but at one point, I think with about 10 weeks left, we were in third. We were behind Howard and Derek Carty, who was consistent. Derek was just consistent all year. It was kind of sitting like 85, 90 points. Was there a moment there where you just thought it was over and you're like, we're playing for second at best?
I think I mentioned this in the article. I thought it was over probably around the time, maybe like in early June, when I made the Davis for Corbin trade with Howard, just thinking that I don't like to make those trades with first place teams, but just basically thinking like, yeah, this trade is a trade for second place and that's just how it's going to be. And at that point I probably, you know, I thought maybe we had like a, you know, 2% chance of winning the league. So I kind of was resigned to finishing, you know, second place at best at that point. And but then I would say maybe in about, I'd say late August to early September was the time period where we really made a run. We went ahead of Derek Carty and we cut the Bender deficit to maybe, it was like maybe 5 points at that time. So that was the point moment where I was just like, you know what, maybe we have a chance here. And it ended up being, you know, we had a very good chance and it just didn't happen in the very end.
Yeah, I mean, I was following, I have to admit, like, because I'm in so many leagues, I was following it, but not that closely. And I got to a point, you know, one nice thing about RT, one thing RT Sports, the host of the site, they do that I like. They have a feature like called charts, and it shows week by week, like the progression, both categorically and overall. And if you look at the chart, you can see us like climbing up. Like we had one big week with 5 weeks left, where we jumped. Well, we jumped from, let's see, like 85. Oh, then we jumped to 90 with like 6 weeks left. Then we jumped to 93. You know, and all of a sudden we were 7.5 out. You know, then we were 6 out with 4 weeks left, and you're kind of looking at the categories, and I think this is where we were. We're like, well, it's still a low shot, but now we go from that 2% where like everything has to break right to, wow, a lot of things are breaking right. And part of that was us, you know, part of that was some improvement in place that I don't think we were expecting, but part of it was, so Howard spent nearly all of his fab early on Juan Soto, which, you know, was great. But the drawback of that is I think it left him with $8 pretty early. And he was out of fab for a while. And then he started having injuries or players not playing. And his offense at one point had like not only eight starters, like 8 or 9 players that pretty much were on the field. And that's where he was losing ground and starting to lose it quickly.
And for about 1 hour on one day in September, we actually were in first place. So the chart won't show that, but brief time on one day, we were in first place, and we were actually getting like a bunch of wins from our relievers, and that was helping. I picked up Craig Stammen later in the season, and there was a period where he got 2 consecutive wins and two straight appearances. So I was like, you know what, this might just happen. We were climbing in wins, and then I think we ended up maybe getting like 1 win over the final 2 weeks of the season. So it just all collapsed at that
point. We had 1 win from September 12th until the end of the season, and we had 1 week where, you know, look, you know, our pitchers, I haven't even mentioned everybody on the staff. You know, you mentioned Corbin, who you traded for. You fab Joey Lucchese, who was good for a while, and then he kind of slipped off. But he was fine as a back-end starter. We just had a week from hell where every pitcher just did badly. Like, and I think the last straw was Corbin, where we were like, oh, you know, he's been the ace. You know, we need him to – it was against the Rockies. It was in Arizona. We just need him to be solid. We need like 6 or 7 innings, like 1 or 2 runs. We need a win. And he was terrible. Like, and he didn't have it. He had no location. He got pulled early. We actually rallied in the last week in terms of the pitching, but you could kind of see that unless Howard's team completely fell off for him, that we probably were going to lose. Although I have to say, like, I think it was only until like there were maybe 1 or 2 days left where I felt like we were really completely out of it.
Yeah, and the key was really that our top pitching even really struggled. And I also think Lucchese was had a really bad start. I think it was like 3 innings, 7 runs during the last 2 weeks of the season. So that was really the key. I mean, even our low-end starters are bad and our top-end guys are bad. And we ended up, you know, we were thinking, oh, we could gain some points in wins. And not only do we not gain those points, but we unexpectedly lost some points in the ratio. So we weren't expecting that at all. And that's really what led to our downfall. We were consistently, you know, like we mentioned before, dominant in the power categories, but it was the late season pitching that just didn't pan out.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple things there. So, you know, one of them was, you know, I'll tip my cap to Doug Dennis of Baseball HQ. Now, it's really funny. Doug usually, you know, and this kind of goes full circle, Doug usually spends $230 on his offense and $30 on his pitching staff. This year, he doubled that. I think he spent about $60 on his pitching staff, which is still a pretty aggressive model in terms of going for hitting. But, you know, it was unlike him, and he was the guy who was right up there with us in both ERA and WHIP, and we went in one direction, he went in the other, especially in WHIP, and that was part of it, too. It wasn't just that we were bad, he was incredible. Like, he just went off in the other direction. But where I thought we had a shot, so, you know, going to the last day, we had a couple pitchers going. We were actually having a really good pitching week the last week. For the full week, we finished with like a 2.65 ERA and a WHIP under 1, both of which were excellent. We had a shot at getting or keeping, I think I was getting like 2 ERA points and getting a WHIP point. And we were 4 out at that point. We got the WHIP point to get to 91. We didn't get the ERA points in part because Jeff Erickson of RotoWire, all of his pitchers pitched, all of them were magnificent. And Steve Gardner had Tyler Anderson go on the last day, not the last day of the play-in games, but Sunday. And Anderson was terrific. And that would have pushed us up to 93 points. I mean, it still would have been heartbreaking, but that's how close it was. Like, we were 4 earned runs allowed away from 2 more points.
And you were mentioning at the very end of the season that you were rooting for, what, a 3-way 91-point tie. So that would have been interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's also something the rules aren't particularly clear on. So I think the rules are worded for a 2-way tie where, you know, you count up the categories, right? And we would have lost a straight up tie with Howard because he was ahead in six categories. We were ahead in four. We would have tied with Derek because it would have been 5-5. But in a three-way tie, I think we were ahead. Interpret that like we would have won the three-way tie. I don't know how that would have played out. I mean, the odds of a three-way tie are obviously incredibly slim. I just thought that would have been entertaining. And then the, you know, on the other side on offense with Howard, you know, just to kind of put a bow on this, he didn't quite collapse enough and he rallied a little bit in the last week. So we essentially, you know, it was a 94-91 overall finish. Besides those four earned runs, you know, the other things that would have made a difference, you know, were like a home run, you know, a stolen base. This is by the teams like behind him or tied with him. Yeah. So the other side of that was Howard's team. So, you know, Howard, you know, we kind of rallied or, you know, we were 4 runs short in ERA, but in the other direction is Howard's team was falling. It didn't quite fall quite enough. So had the team tied with him hit another home run, had the team behind him in steals got another steal, you know, and then additionally, had there been another save or had he had one fewer save, you know, we mentioned that with Wade Davis before, we would have beat him by a point. So it was like those four things which need to happen, which is a lot, but they were all extremely close.
Yeah, we needed him to complete the total collapse, and it just, he at the very end, he made like a little bit of a jump, and that's what turned out to be the difference. I remember, I think it was a Saturday where Juan Soto stole three bases, and I was like, you know what, this is just maybe not going to happen. So he was close to losing at least a point in steals, and that just solidified his spot there. So yeah, it was kind of like a 95% collapse, but it wasn't a total collapse.
Well, the other side of that too is, you know, Doug Dennis, who was the team that was approaching, you know, we mentioned on the pitching side, he didn't help us on the hitting side. He was tied. You know, he was 4 runs batted in behind Howard and charging going into last week. And then he drove in 18 for the week, which was, and Howard drove in 26. So he didn't get at that point, which we were expecting. The other two teams behind Howard actually got a lot closer, but they were further back to begin with. So it didn't work out. I mean, that's just the kind of stuff that happens. And the last week's always tough. If you're chasing, it's always difficult because you're the one running out of time. Like, players start to sit, teams have clinched. It was worse in the AL because everything was set. The NL had more drama because, you know, there were teams playing, you know, for those last slots, including the Cardinals, who were in until the next last day. So that helped us a little bit, but it made it really tough. And yeah, the last day not counting didn't do us any favors either. Not that we would have won, but Howard had almost no players on those teams, and a lot of the teams chasing him did. And I think actually it's funny. I think Howard would have lost a point. He would have won by 2 instead of 3 had those games counted. I actually went and figured that out.
So, yeah, well, he would have, yeah. So, you know, but in closing, you know, I was, when I'm leading the league, say even like by a few points at the end of the season, and I'd lose the lead, I'd be really upset. But in this particular season, it was like, and we were behind the entire season. We weren't in first place at all. And the fact that we even made a run late in the season was, you know, a positive. So I'm not, you know, it was a successful season, and I'm not as, you know, disappointed as I would be if I say, you know, had a big lead and just lost it at the very end. So.
Yeah, and I'll concur with that. I think it's, you know, it's tough when you read these recaps and hear these podcasts. And one nice thing about having the distance here with this is that I think if we recorded this the day after the season, it would have been a very different tone. You and I might have sounded not upset, but more
irritated,
riled up. Yeah. And, you know, now, like, I'm like, you know what? Finishing 3 points out and that close in 4 categories in a 12-team expert league that, honestly, I did the auction kind of on the fly, I feel pretty good about.
Yeah, that was a great job in the auction. I never really do those, you know, draft valuations, but you know, that turned out to be a savior for you. You had your dollar values all ready to go. And I think that's why you volunteered to do it, because you were the only one who was prepared with those.
It was why they asked me, actually. I think another one of the participants, I won't mention who it was, said that, yeah, that's pretty much the only person Steve can ask, because everybody is either here or they're not prepared for this specific auction. And, you know, we don't want to, you know, the point of that was they didn't expect, probably didn't somebody to do this well, but they didn't want to embarrass somebody by putting them in a setting where they weren't ready. And, you know, particularly in an only, like, you know this, Zach, like, you know baseball well. But the bottom end of the pool, if you're not prepared for an only, can be rough.
Yeah, and it was a good experience for me because I've never taken over a previously drafted team, and I really like to, you know, mold my teams the way I want to. And but just to inherit a previously drafted team and to manage it the best I could, and especially with the strategy of the, you know, sort of the Stars and Scrubs strategy, which it wasn't a complete Stars and Scrubs team, but it landed up being a team that was you know, relying on certain players. But just that experience, you know, was a learning experience for me, being able to kind of adapt and manage a team that, you know, I liked some of the players, but I wasn't really crazy about other of the players. But it was good. It was a test of my managing abilities.
Yeah, I, you know, hopefully, I don't know how it's going to work out. You know, I don't know if this slot is going to be, you know, we're going to BP's going to have to keep it, or we're going to, you know, is going to go to somebody else. But hopefully, whether it's in this league or the mix, you know, hopefully you're back in labor next year.
Yep, I hope so.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break. Like I said, we're kind of mindful of time, but I think we hit everything, and we'll be right back to wrap it up. Thank you once again for listening to Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus podcast. This is episode 176. Once again, thank you to Zach Steinhorn, the fantasy editor, my co-host, and to Jim Macramos behind the glass. We are kind of going into a semi-winter hibernation. There probably will be anywhere from 2 to 4 episodes between now and January when we ramp up fantasy coverage. That's all to be determined, though, so you might not hear from us for a while. So I really want to thank you, the listeners, people who have stuck with us all year, you know, have gone through this. You know, I know the beginning of the year was a completely different team. We had George Bissell here. Brett Sayer was here. Just thank you so much for sticking with us. I know we had a long hiatus at the beginning of the year. You guys and everybody are the reason that we do this. So once again, thank you very much. Thanks for a great season, and we look forward to being in your earbuds again soon.
Thanks for listening, everyone.